All right, welcome back to the deep dive. Today we're going way back to the very first century with the early Christians and a problem they were facing in Corinth.
A problem that's, well, it's fascinating, I think.
Oh, yeah. Food sacrificed to idols.
I mean, who knew, right?
You don't really hear about that every day.
No, you don't.
But this is a big deal in 1 Corinthians,
No.
specifically chapters 8 through 11.1, which is what we are diving into today, based on Dr. Metter's lecture, Lecture 21.
That's right, yeah.
So it might seem kind of weird to think about this ancient problem, you know? Like, who cares? What do
Right.
I care about food sacrifice to idols? But there are actually some really interesting parallels for us today.
Oh, there are.
And Metter's even gives this example about his students in Singapore.
Yeah, he had students in Singapore who had to deal with situations where cultural practices and religious beliefs would kind of clash.
Like, you know, whose practices do you follow? How do you behave?
Right.
What do you do?
Like, what are you supposed to eat?
Right.
Like, what if there's some tradition, you're invited to something, and it's like, do you participate?
Right.
What do you do?
Right.
And how do you think about it? And
Exactly.
you can't just say, oh, that's just ancient history, because we still have those dilemmas today.
Exactly. So we are going to use Dr. Metter's lecture to kind of guide us through this. And he does a really great job of weaving in some historical context, some stuff from the Bible. And he even brings in some other scholars, like Bruce Winter and Murphy O'Connor. So we are going to try to tease out the main tensions going on here. What was Paul trying to address, and how did he offer some guidance to these people?
Right, exactly. Because he wasn't just giving them rules. He was actually trying to teach them how to think through those situations themselves.
Yeah, principles that they could apply. So maybe we can apply those same principles today as well.
And that's the goal, right? I mean, it's fascinating to learn about the ancient world, but we want to see how it connects to us now.
Absolutely. Okay, so to set the scene, let's talk about Corinth. This was a really important city.
It was huge. It was a port city, a major trading center. You had all these different cultures mixing there.
And it was also full of idols,
Oh, yeah.
right?
It was like idol central.
I mean, it was polytheistic, it was pagan.
Yeah, and Emeters uses this great analogy of a fish not feeling wet.
Right.
Like for the people in Corinth, idols and temples were everywhere. They were just part of the landscape, like a fish swimming in water.
Yeah, they didn't even think about it. That was just their reality. And
Exactly.
it wasn't just like statues and temples. I
Right.
mean, it was everything, like public fountains, even.
Public baths. Even things that we'd consider like everyday stuff, they were all connected to the gods. Which makes it even more amazing when you think about these early Christians who were coming in with this idea of one God.
Yeah, I mean, can you
I mean,
imagine?
that was a radical idea.
It's like the opposite.
Totally different worldview.
And Metters even mentions this ancient travel guide, Pausanias's description of Greece.
Oh, yeah, that's a cool source.
And it really describes how many temples and shrines and like sacred spots there were.
It really brings the city to life. And you can imagine how overwhelming it must have been for these early Christians.
Yeah, just everywhere you look.
Exactly.
So with that backdrop, we've got these new Christians and they're facing this very practical problem.
Yeah.
What do we do with all this food that's being offered to idols? And the lecture really breaks it down into three main situations.
Okay.
So first, you might be invited to a meal at a temple.
Right.
The second one, you're just going to the market to buy food.
Right.
And third, you might be invited to a friend's house
Right.
who is not a believer, who is maybe going to be serving you food that has been sacrificed to idols.
Exactly.
So let's start with the temples.
Okay.
These temples were not just for worship.
No, not
No.
at all. They were more like community centers. People would have weddings there, retirement parties, even trade guilds would meet there. We see that in Acts 19, and even funerals.
So you couldn't really avoid them.
No, you couldn't. It was part of life.
So if you were a Christian and you're like, well, I'm not going to any of those things, you're
Right.
going to be really
You'd be
isolating.
cutting yourself off from the community.
Yeah, you would be. Now, the lecture does bring up this interesting question. What were these temple dining areas actually like?
Yeah, that's a good point. It's not entirely clear. Were they only for banquets to the gods, or could you also just rent them out for a birthday party?
Like a regular event.
Yeah.
And Metters does bring in Murphy O'Connor here.
Yeah, O'Connor suggests that it was probably both.
Both.
Yeah, some areas might be specifically for religious meals, but others might have been more flexible.
So that makes it even more tricky for Christians to figure out, okay, what can we do? What can we not do?
Exactly.
Right. Now let's move on to the marketplace.
Okay.
you're just trying to buy food for your family.
Right.
You go to the butcher shop. What's going on there?
Well, here's the thing. A lot of the meat that was sacrificed to idols, it didn't just disappear.
Right.
It probably ended up in those temple restaurants we talked about, yeah. or even just in the regular market.
Yeah.
So you could be buying meat that had been part of a sacrifice without even knowing it.
So how do you even know?
Right. That's the problem.
Right.
And it raises all sorts of questions for these new Christians.
Yeah. Like, are we supporting idol worship just by going to the market?
Yeah.
Right.
That must have been a real dilemma for them.
It must have been.
Sure.
And then the last situation is being invited to a friend's house for a meal.
Right.
And you know your friend is not a Christian.
Right.
So you know there's a possibility they might be serving food that was sacrificed to idols.
Right. Exactly.
So what do you do? Do you risk offending them?
Right.
Do you eat it anyway?
Do you try to find out where the food came from? It's awkward.
Yeah. It's a tough spot to be in. And Metters makes this really interesting point about the way Paul structures this section in 1 Corinthians.
Oh, yeah. How so?
So he uses this phrase, now, about, like, now about food sacrificed to idols in chapter 8, verse 1. And then again, later at the end of chapter 10, flee from idolatry. So he's kind of bookending this whole discussion.
So you know it's important.
Yeah. He's saying this is a big deal.
And it's not just about the food itself. He's connecting it to this bigger issue of idolatry.
Exactly. And the ultimate goal for Paul is that everything we do should be for God's glory.
Right.
And we shouldn't be causing others to stumble in their faith.
That's a key point. It's not just about our own conscience. We have to think about how our actions affect others.
Exactly. Now, to understand all of this, we have to remember the Jewish context, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
We can't forget that early Christianity was very closely tied to Judaism.
Right.
And Judaism had really strong views about idolatry.
Yeah, I mean, they were completely against it.
Right. They had a long history of resisting idolatry.
So these new Christians were coming from that background. And Metters mentions how Jewish communities in the Roman Empire actually had certain allowances for their practices, including what they could eat.
Yeah, like those kosher stands they had in the markets.
Yeah.
That's a great example.
And Bruce Winter, in his book, After Paul Left Corinth, he suggests that any changes in how Rome viewed those Jewish allowances could have made things even more complicated.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It would have been a ripple effect.
Yeah, for both Jews and Christians.
So it was a really complex situation.
It was. Now, the lecture goes on to talk about two main ways that scholars have interpreted Paul's response to this whole problem.
Okay, the two main views.
Yeah. Yeah. So the first one is often called the traditional academic view.
Okay.
And this view distinguishes between two groups of people in the Corinthian church, the strong and the weak.
Okay, so the strong and the weak.
Yeah. Now, the strong, they understood that idols were nothing.
Right. They had that knowledge.
They'd grasped it.
They knew that these idols had no real power.
But the weak were still kind of bound by their past associations with idols.
Yeah, they were still working through it.
They hadn't quite gotten there yet.
And, you know, it makes sense. They're coming from a culture where these idols were so important.
Yeah, it's a big shift.
It's a huge shift.
Yeah. And scholars like Wendell Willis really highlight this.
Yeah, they point out that Paul was really concerned about protecting the weak.
Yeah.
He didn't want the strong to just flaunt their freedom and cause the weak to stumble.
Yeah, he's saying, just because you know it's okay doesn't mean everyone else does.
Right. And he's saying that knowledge without love can actually be harmful.
Yeah. So Paul was trying to balance things out.
Yeah, he was trying to find that middle ground.
He was saying, yes, the strong are technically correct, but they have a responsibility to be sensitive to the weak.
Right. It's about community.
Yeah.
It's about caring for each other.
Now, this interpretation also draws a distinction between just eating food that was offered to an idol, which is what we see in chapter 8, and actually participating in idol worship itself, which comes up in chapter 10.
Yeah, those are two different things.
They are.
And the traditional view suggests that Paul was okay with the first one, as long as it didn't cause anyone to stumble.
Right. Like if you're at the market and you buy some meat and you don't know where it came from,
right,
that's not a big deal.
But if you're going to a temple and participating in a ritual, that's a different story.
Yeah, that's crossing the line. So it's about intent and context.
Exactly. It's interesting to think about how this idea of guilt by association might have played into it.
Yeah. Like maybe some of these new Christians were still worried that just by touching something that had been offered to an idol, they were somehow becoming contaminated.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And Paul was trying to move them beyond that.
He was trying to help them develop a more mature understanding of their faith.
Yeah, but not everyone was there yet. Okay, so that's the traditional view. Now let's look at the alternate academic view.
Okay, so what's the other side of the coin?
So this view really emphasizes the literary and rhetorical unity of chapters 8 through 10.
Okay.
And it suggests that Paul is actually taking a much harder line.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's essentially saying no involvement with food that's been offered to idols, period.
Wow, so no exceptions.
No exceptions.
Okay.
So no eating in temples.
Right.
No idol feasts. Oh. And even be careful about the meat you buy in the market.
Right.
Now, in this view, the weak aren't necessarily a separate group of people.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, they're more like a literary device that Paul is using to make his point.
Okay, I see.
And scholars like Hurd and Gooch, they support this view.
Okay.
And they see Paul as calling for complete separation from anything related to idolatry.
So it's not about accommodating different levels of understanding.
No.
It's about setting a firm boundary.
Yeah.
That's a big difference.
It is. So we have these two different interpretations, both looking at the same text, the same historical context, and coming to different conclusions.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
It is. And Metters himself seems to lean more towards that traditional view. He emphasizes Bruce Winter's work on the Roman context, but he acknowledges that the alternate view has some valid points. So it's a bit of a debate, you know?
Yeah, it's good to see both sides.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So ultimately, what can we learn from all of this? What are the key principles that Paul was trying to convey?
Well, one of the most important ones is in chapter 8, verse 1. Knowledge puffs up, but love builds up.
Right.
He's saying that knowledge is important, but it's not enough.
Yeah, it's got to be balanced with love.
Exactly. And then he goes on to say, we know that an idol is nothing at all in the world, and that there is no God but one. That's verse 4. So he's not saying that knowledge is bad. He's saying that it needs to be guided by love.
Yeah. And he also recognizes that not everyone has the same level of knowledge. He says, but not everyone possesses this knowledge in verse 7. So we need to be sensitive to that.
Absolutely.
We need to be careful not to cause others to stumble.
Right. And that idea of stumbling is really important. He keeps coming back to it.
Yeah. And it all comes down to conscience.
Yeah. Some people might have a weak conscience.
Right.
And for them, eating food offered to idols could feel really wrong, even if they know intellectually that the idols are powerless.
Yeah. And we see this throughout Paul's letters. He's constantly putting the needs of others above his own.
Yeah. He's willing to give up his own freedom for the sake of others.
Yeah. And at the heart of all of this is this idea of worldview, right?
Yeah. These new Christians were going through a massive transformation.
Yeah. They were moving from this polytheistic worldview to a monotheistic one.
Right.
And that's a huge shift.
It's like changing the way you see the entire world.
Yeah. And Metters has this really helpful analogy here. He talks about information entering the heart mind and being processed through a worldview.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like if your worldview is that there are many gods, then the idea of eating food offered to one of those gods isn't going to seem like a big deal.
Right.
But if your worldview is that there is only one god, then it becomes a much bigger issue.
Exactly. And those deep-seated beliefs, those worldviews, they take time to change.
They do. So Paul was trying to guide them through this transition.
Yeah, he was trying to help them understand the implications of this new way of seeing the world.
Exactly.
So to sum it all up, the main tension in Corinth was this clash between personal freedom and the impact on others.
Right.
The strong had the freedom to eat whatever they wanted, but they also had a responsibility to consider how their actions might affect the weak.
Yeah.
And the key takeaway for us today is that we need to think about the conscience and worldview of others when we're exercising our own freedoms.
Yeah, especially in a world that's so diverse.
Right. We encounter people from all sorts of backgrounds with all sorts of beliefs.
Yeah.
And we need to be sensitive to that.
And Paul emphasizes that love should be our guiding principle.
Absolutely. Love should always come first.
So how do we apply all of this to our lives today? I mean, it might seem like a stretch to go from food offered to idols to our modern world. But think about it.
Yeah. The principles are still relevant.
Yeah. What about social media?
Oh, yeah. Good point.
I mean, what kind of content do you share?
Right.
Do you ever think about how it might be perceived by people from different backgrounds or beliefs?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Or what about participating in cultural events that maybe have values that don't align with yours?
Right. Or supporting businesses that engage in practices you disagree with.
Yeah. Where do you draw the line?
It's tough.
It is. And it all comes back to that question of worldview.
Yeah. What's your perceptual set? as Metters puts it.
How does your worldview shape the way you see the world and the choices you make?
It's a good thing to reflect on.
It is. And if you want to explore this further, definitely check out 1 Corinthians itself.
Yeah, it's worth a read.
And maybe do some digging into the historical context of the early church.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff.
It is. And it might surprise you how relevant it still is today.
Absolutely.
All right, thanks for joining us for another deep dive.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We'll see you next time.
See you later.